Some of you may have heard the story about two identical twins. Why do I always say two identical twins? Two twins who happen to be identical. Okay. At any rate, they were alike in every single way, except one twin was an absolute optimist, looking at everything in his world in the highest possible light. And the other one was just a mind-driven pessimist, seeing the negative in every single situation that occurred. Well, the parents began to get a little worried about this extreme optimism and pessimism in their boys, and so they consulted their family doctor, who created a plan. And the plan was that the parents were to give to the pessimistic son a brand new shiny bicycle for his birthday. And to the optimistic son, they were to give him, are you ready for this? A pile of, putting it nicely, manure. Okay? Well, the parents thought this is really a drastic plan, but they were desperate, so they decided to implement it. So the day arrived at the boy's birthday, and the pessimistic young man saw his bicycle, took one look at it, and said, "Oh, great, thanks a lot. I'll probably fall off of this and break my neck." And the other son, they presented this beautifully wrapped package. And when he opened it, yes, you all know what was in it. And he took one moment to look at it. And then he just raced outside, screaming at the top of his lungs, oh, goody, I know with this much manure, there must be a pony around here somewhere." Now, this story really does exemplify one of Unity's central teachings, that our consciousness, our thoughts, and feelings have the power to shape and create our reality. As we are told in Proverbs, as a man thinks, so is he. You want to fix this for me? Thank you, my technical assistant here. I know, but it's not working. So today, I know it's on, not working. Okay, so today I'm inviting everyone, to spend some time to think about how our thoughts and feelings, those that we hold in consciousness, affect our lives. Now to begin with, let's remember that God created two aspects of consciousness, the heavens and the earth. In the heavenly absolute realm, we have divine principle and pure divine ideas. Thank you. Oh, thank you. I forgot that. This is the realm of infinite possibilities. Now, where did Jesus say the heavenly realm is? Where did he say the heavenly realm is? Heaven is within. That's right. Excuse me while I do something we forgot this morning. Okay. Within. And so that means we always have access to this absolute realm. However, as human beings, we also live in the relative realm, the realm of our constantly changing world, the physical plane that's always shifting around us. And here is the good news for all of us to consider. Every single one of us, without exception, is given dominion over our thoughts. And when we think about it, God is sometimes called divine mind, and God's ideas are always spiritual. God can only be God. However, since we are in a human plane, our ideas can be either spiritual or they can be material, depending upon our understanding and focus. So it's really important to know that this dominion over our thinking is our divine right. In fact, it's actually one of our spiritual powers. And we all know the verse in Genesis, and it's 1:26, where God says, "Let humankind have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle and over all the wild animals of the earth." Now, traditionally, this is interpreted to mean that we simply have dominion over physicality, over our physical world. But as many of you know, in the Bible, metaphysically, animals represent ideas. So this also means that we have dominion over our own ideas and thoughts and emotions even the wild ones. Those are the wild animals. Our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, said, "Humankind is the power of God in action. To us is given the highest power in the universe, the conscious power of thought." Now, the idea that we humans create our experiences by the activity of our thinking is unity principle number 3, and it is sometimes called the law of mind action. And the law of mind action is usually phrased, "thoughts held in mind produce their own kind." Now, some metaphysicians throughout the ages have taught that any consistent thought that we hold in our mind, especially if it comes with strong emotion, will eventually manifest in the outer realm. Reverend Paul Hasselbeck writes about a minister who was preaching about this law of mind action, and was preaching in that way about it. And with great passion, he preached, "The very thoughts we hold in our minds produce in the outer and as a reality." And all during his sermon, he noticed there was one young man in the second row who was squirming and becoming increasingly uncomfortable as the lesson went on. And so right after the service, the minister kind of cornered the young man and said, "What's going on? Why were you so upset?" And the young boy said, sheepishly, "Well, Pastor, all I think about these days is girls. I don't want to turn into a girl." Well, like many complex truths, it's really not quite that simple, thank goodness. And in the book, The Power of Point of Power, Hasselbeck writes, "I do know that some of my thoughts I hold with strong emotion do outpicture in the manifest realm." And that's why we need to be observers of our thoughts. But he also says, "And I am grateful that others do not. If every thought I ever held with feeling actually manifested, this world would be a very scary place." And some of us can identify with that. I might add there that there also might be no spouses or partners left on the universe, but anyway. Present company accepted, of course. Okay. Actually, the law of mind action works 100% of the time, but it works 100% of the time in our consciousness, at the level of the mind. Like everything in the universe, and today's daily word was perfect, we operate in a field of energy. When we hold joyful thoughts and feelings, we actually vibrate with joy. And if I wake up and say to myself in the morning, which I try to do, "It's a beautiful day in my consciousness," in that mindset, I actually attract myself to more moments of joy. Likewise, unfortunately, if I wake up focused on fear, I am likely to see that fear grows and creates that chain reaction. And then I see more and more things in the day to be afraid about, and all of a sudden my world becomes this frightening place. Now, often we human beings think that something outside of ourselves makes us happy or sad or fearful, don't we? We all think this way. We say things like, "Oh, he made me mad," or "That made me so sad." However, in reality, events do not cause our feelings. The event is never the source. The source is always this, what we are telling ourselves about the event. Two of us could have the exact same experience at the exact same time and walk away with drastically different feelings. Consider a sudden thunderstorm on a beautiful Saturday morning, a young bride having an outdoor wedding, and a farmer needing rain would have decidedly different reactions, wouldn't they? It's how we perceive, view, and think about events that lead to our feelings. Now, as we begin to observe our own thinking, which is the first stage, we do need to monitor our self-talk, asking ourselves, "What am I telling myself about this event?" Because as our slide shows, your self-talk is a conversation with the universe. Now, the law of mind action really is all about, or one way it works, is that in our universe we have unlimited possibilities. The divine realm is a realm of unlimited possibilities. And we choose what becomes real partly by our focus. In fact, psychologists have proven that our thoughts, feelings, and belief actually determine what data we take in and what we ignore. Now, we've talked about this before. There's something called the Volkswagen principle. A lot of you know what it is. It happened to me when I bought my first Toyota. Mine was the Toyota principle, I guess. Singularly focused on Toyotas, it seemed like overnight everybody on the highway was driving one. And what happened was I just didn't see the other types of cars on the road. We actually ignore data that is not our focus. So today I'd like to invite you to engage in a little focus experiment this morning. Some of you have seen this because we actually watched it in the Lessons in Truth class a little while back. So if you kind of know what the punchline is, don't give it away. Let's all just follow the directions with no outward reaction. Okay? Here goes. No, that's not it. All right, hang on. Here we go. How do you like it so far? We're going. Here we go. Well, I hope this is going to work. Maybe not. All right, let me try one more way before we give it up. Let's try this way. Shoot. Okay, let me get started. And then go. Okay, it's going to work. All right, it's not going to work. Sorry. I want you all to know this worked perfectly well at home. Okay, one more attempt and then I'll give it up. All right, I promise we'll do this at a later day. Darn, okay. I'm actually in the, what? Try what? I don't have a right click, I have a Mac. So if you, do you think you can come get it, Bert? I'd be happy for your help. We'll do it another time. We'll do it another time. So I'm just going to kind of skip it for now. The point is, what we focus on becomes our reality. That's the most important thing. So let's go back to our Toyota example. I did not see those other cars because I was not focused on them. And that whole idea of what our awareness is absolutely contributes in a profound way, even to what we see. If, like the pessimistic twin, we choose to focus our thinking on the negative appearances of the world, the violence, the hatred, the destruction, we fail to see the everyday good. And failing to see the everyday good, we actually fail to see God at work in our universe. Have you ever gotten really angry or upset with a friend, partner, or family member? Anybody? Okay. Just a couple people have, okay? And what happens when we do? All of a sudden, just like the Toyotas, all we see is the person's faults and limitations, right? If we don't condition our consciousness, that's what happens. All of a sudden, the person can do absolutely nothing right. So the familiar saying, well, energy goes, where attention flows means if we focus on what's wrong in the world and in our lives, we magnify the problem. We always have the choice of where to place our focus. When Jesus advises us to seek first the kingdom of God, he is telling us to focus on our higher selves. We can think from our human personality, or what we sometimes call our ego, or, and then our choices will usually be based on lack, limitation, and fear, or we can think from our higher selves, our spiritual selves, the Christ of our being, and then our choices will be full of love, compassion, and unlimited possibilities. Now, Dr. Hasselbeck notes that on our way to developing Christ consciousness, and it's a journey, and we're all on that journey, it's helpful for us to discover, or to consider, I should say, four levels of consciousness. These levels are not the only way to consider consciousness, but they can be a good spiritual tool for us just to kind of discern what is our orientation to the world around us. So the lowest level is called victim consciousness. Here I believe and feel that things are happening to me. I suspect we've all been here at times, have we not? Wallowing in a sea of self-pity. This is that the world is against me, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I think I'll eat a worm attitude, right? We've all been there. In this consciousness, we think and feel like we have absolutely no control or responsibility over an experience. So that's one, kind of the beginning level of consciousness. We also, however, have something that's called victor consciousness. And this is actually a higher level than victim consciousness, because here we believe that we have some personal power to control our environment, our world. Actually, though, here that power is mostly from the level of our personality. In other words, it's about personal power, not God power. And an example might be, depending on what's in our mind, if I manifest a parking spot, if I visualize a parking spot and manifest one, it could be an example of this type of consciousness. That's that celebratory, yes, I did it consciousness, right? And we love those moments. But here's the thing to think about. This state of consciousness has to contain some victim thinking, because for there to be a victor, there has to be a victim, right? And so, in a way, we're still a little bit in that victim-victor thinking. Now, the next slide, or the next one, is called vessel consciousness. This is when I realize that there is something greater in me. And in the words of Eric Butterworth, some of us, however, view the Christ within as a raisin in a bagel, just a tiny little piece of who we are, just a tiny little piece. And so we're still, we realize that Christ is within, but we're still thinking of Christ as something separate within, okay? At a higher level of this is when I see myself as an instrument of God or an expression of spirit, which we often do. And this is a huge spiritual step, especially for those of us who were raised in traditional Christianity. But it is not really oneness. Paul Hasselbeck gives an example that if we say that we are an expression, we could think of playing a piano. The sound is an expression of that piano, but it's not the piano, is it? It's just an expression. So the ultimate level of consciousness is what is called verity consciousness. This is a principle of irrefutable, enduring truth. This is where I claim and act from my spiritual nature in me. Now, when I come to full realization of this, I am awakening to my oneness. I see myself not just as a vessel of God, but as pure divine potential. I realize that there's no separate divine mind and me. Jesus said, "When you have seen me, you have seen the Father." Here I reach the most profound understanding of all. The Christ is me, and I am the Christ. And in fact, we call this level I am consciousness. There's no sense of separation between my human self and my divine self. Now, it's important to realize that these levels are not linear. We don't just kind of go up the scale and stay there. At least most of us don't. We move back and forth from moment to moment, usually. And let's just stop for a minute and ask this question. What level do you think Jesus would have mostly been in? What would be your guess? Verity, and that's right. He modeled, for most of his moments on this earth, he modeled verity consciousness. And yet, Paul Hezelbeck suggests that the night before the crucifixion, he did slip back into victim consciousness when he said, "Take this cup from me." And maybe that lesson that we looked about a few weeks ago, when he turned over the tables in the temple, maybe at that moment he was more in victor consciousness. And so, being both fully human and fully divine, Jesus did sometimes slip out of it, but the point is he didn't stay there. He always demonstrated the power to overcome and rise above. The level of awareness that we spend most of our time in is really where we're living from. And if we find ourselves operating from one of the lower levels, victim or victor, we don't need to beat ourselves up about it, because if we do, what kind of consciousness is that? Victim. That's victim if we're beating ourselves up. But also, we don't want to build a house and live there. We want to move past it, don't we? And so the way we can do that is to follow our way-shower and pray ourselves out of it. Jesus went away and prayed so many times. And we can also meditate, and we can use affirmations based on spiritual truths. Reverend Cher Holden suggests a practice for us to kind of lift ourselves to higher levels, and she calls it the V test. So I want to share a little bit of it with you today. She says, at the end of each day, I can identify a specific example where I might have been in a lower consciousness. And if I decide, for example, that I operated in victim consciousness, she suggests that I can just go back there in my mind and sort of replay the event. If, for example, and this happened to me the other day, I will admit it, I was impatient with someone who had the nerve to stand in the grocery line and guess what? Write a check. Who writes checks anymore? I mean, it took forever. I'm like, come on, lady, you know, and she had to find her checkbook and get her pen out of her purse and da-da-da-da-da. And so as I revisit that in my mind, I might have said to myself, I could say to myself, how might I have navigated that from verity consciousness? And in my not-so-instant replay, I might decide that instead of sighing or rolling my eyes, I could have struck up a conversation with her, sympathizing with her about time and how long things take. Or I could engage in a minute prayer like we talked about last week, or a quick meditation. Maybe I could just do a quick affirmation to my consciousness, such as, centered in divine nature, I have all the time I need this day. So this, and it occurs to me that this technique, sometimes when we can be conscious of what we're thinking, we could even do on the spot. I mean, even at the time, I might have stopped and taken a deep breath and thought, okay, you know, it's not about this lady and her check. It's about me and thinking I'm rushed. So sometimes we can even correct ourselves in the moment. I think that knowing that we can live from any of these at any time gives us self-awareness and the realization that when challenges show up in our lives, we can control our consciousness. That's the main point. Eric Butterworth says, and I know all of you know this quote, it is an important moment in your life when you discover the great truth that things may happen around you, things may happen to you, but the only thing that really matters is what happens, what? Within you. It's your own attitude about it. Now, obviously, we really do have very little control, I don't care how good our consciousness is, over other people's behavior. I mean, I think we're fooling ourselves if we think we do. However, we can always decide not to let anyone else take away our power, our joy, or our peace. In the words of Mahatma Gandhi, I will not let anyone walk through my mind with their dirty feet. And so, even in our truly dark days, our times of trouble and turmoil, when the appearances of this world seem so challenging, each of us has the power to immerse ourselves in the awareness that we are God expressing, and we therefore have the strength, the wisdom, and the faith to bring forth the good in the situation. We can move beyond victim consciousness questions, and here are a couple of them. Why did this happen to me? Or, even worse, especially if it comes from someone else, what did I do to bring this on? Some of you are shaking your heads. I have a really dear friend who happens to be a licensed UNITY teacher from another church who was diagnosed with breast cancer. And one of the other licensed UNITY teachers, I think they should take away her license, said, "What did you do to bring on this breast cancer?" There is a name for that, and it's called metaphysical malpractice. The law of mind action is not that simple. Maybe if we were living on a desert island and we had no chemicals in our environment and all our food was pure, who knows? Then maybe, or maybe if we didn't all have this consciousness of cancer, maybe that might work a little bit. But the truth is that question of what did I do to bring this on, or why did this happen to me, is absolutely the wrong question. Here are the right questions, or at least some of them. How can I grow from this? How can I use this for my own spiritual growth? How can I bring forth good from this? How can I use this to express the love I am? Remember, as spiritual beings having a human experience, with every single thought, we can lift our consciousness to the realm of the absolute and draw from it the pure goodness of God, no matter what is happening in our outer world. And so, in the words of Paul in Philippians 4:8, and I know all of us know this beautiful verse, he says, "Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is comfortable, if there's any excellence, and if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things." Now, Paul's words are really about aligning our thoughts with what is already spiritually true and aligning our thoughts with who we really are. For when we consider our spiritual identity one with the Christ, and the real Christ mind is in each one of us, we live in a consciousness that we are one with all the divine ideas of God. We are one with life. We are one with wisdom. We are one with power and strength and all the rest. Just think about that. And now let's just take a moment to just condition our consciousness by helping us understand the absolute magnificence and power of the divine. By just saying to ourselves, and in a moment out loud, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one power and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.